today we're going to be exploring all kinds of issues that relate to singleness as it's experienced in various ways, like we talked about the first session for those of you who were here, and also not only the church's response to singleness, but singles' responses to the church. So it's that interrelationship between singles or singleness and the church. And I think what I'd like to do is start by reading a story that was written, very brief story that was written in this publication called Single Speak that used to be published by the Division for Outreach in the ELCA. It was written anonymously, actually, so I don't have an author, but I'm going to read it just to see if it stimulates some reaction and some discussion. It's a sort of a discussion starter. So, listen, this may not be an experience that's shared by all of you, but this is one person's experience. She walked through the double doors into the large room where people were already gathering. It was her first day, and she had meticulously prepared herself so as to make an appropriate first impression. She was glad she had done so, for as she looked around the room, those already seated appeared to be in their best business outfits. The finely dressed people sat side by side, except for the person who sat towards the front, isolated from the others. This person was definitely in charge. The others occasionally looked towards him, but spent most of their time sitting quietly, fidgeting with uncomfortable collars strangled by their ties, and with buttoned vests that had been too tight 20 pounds ago. She looked across the room, hoping to see a familiar face, but found no eyes looking to greet her. Behind her, two others approached, engaged in a short personal interlude which ended abruptly as they crossed the threshold. Apparently, this was not the place to engage in pleasantries. They brushed by her, leaving her alone again in the doorway. They took their place, and she felt a rush of disappointment overwhelming her. Somehow she had hoped it would be different than the last place. Where should she sit? There was a place open next to a sullen-looking woman whose unspoken gestures of frowning and heavy sighing sent out messages that she would rather be doing anything else than sitting here. Another spot was available by the man examining his fingernails. He looked up, but when his eyes caught hers, he quickly looked away and began to fidget with the papers in front of him. The man in the front adjusted his glasses, straightened his papers, and with a loud seemed to clear some bothersome catch in his throat. Everyone else took this as a sign that the meeting was about to begin. She quickly sat down by the paper shuffler. She adjusted her business suit, fumbled with her papers, and again glanced out towards the others, hoping to catch the eye of a mutual comrade, or at least to see some welcoming sign. No sign, no gesture, no sense of camaraderie. In fact, everyone seemed oblivious to anyone else but the assumed leader. Darn, she thought, I hate meetings like this. The leader stood, cleared his throat, and began, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Okay, I throw that out as a discussion starter to hear some of your reactions. Positive, negative? Has this been your experience? Has it been different from your experience? Just what are some of your reactions when you hear this story?
I left church because of that. And everyone was friendly to me, but it was only because I was an organist and they knew who I was. You know, if I hadn't played the organ and done solo work, I would have been part of it. It would have been like that, exactly like that.
Okay, so you've had a similar kind of experience, and you made a decision based on that to leave that particular place. Other experiences or thoughts, comments that this story or doesn't it have any meaning for any of you?
I haven't really gone looking for new churches that much lately, except when I started school. And but with me, it was more that people were friendly with the church I went to, the small Methodist church. But I've talked with friends that are students that have just graduated, and especially, well, I don't know if it's especially for women or for men too, I think, that young people, it's hard to get taken seriously as an adult when well, single of my age, and maybe people talk to you about as a serious kind of member of a community, it's a little harder, especially when there's not a big group of people your age.
Okay, so as a young single adult, it's sometimes hard to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
In a church setting. Okay. What else? Anyone else? Maybe it would help to throw out just a few statistics. About half of our adult population in the United States are single adults at the present moment. But about 90% of our members in ELCA congregations are married couples, that 90% of the adults. And I
90%?
Yeah, 90%
are married
couples in the most recent reporting of the Lutheran magazine. Now,
that's surprising.
That may not hold accurate, but they checked with our Office for Research and Evaluation, and
with the divorce rate so high, I find it kind of inconsistent. I mean, reason and logic would tell me it's lower.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too, and all I can go by is the kinds of reports the congregations send in. The ELCA congregations report that 90% of their members. Now this may also mean something if we define membership in the ELCA. That may have some implications, because it may be that many of our single adults, whether they be always single or divorced or widowed, it may mean that for whatever reason they're choosing not to be official members of ELCA congregations, but may be in attendance in worship or may participate in other ways in congregations. So we're talking only about membership,
attendance. And you're saying that this information is gathered in each congregation's parochial report?
Mm-hmm. Well,
or what did they base that figure
on? My assumption is that that's where it's gathered from. It was quoted in the issue of the Lutheran that carried all the articles on singleness. Mm-hmm. It was in the September 26, 1990 issue of the Lutheran, and it says here, and I even asked about it.
Yeah.
I asked the person who wrote this, and she told me that she had checked, and so I assume that it came from the parochial reports. And I know I'm being taped, but that's only an assumption, okay? And I will check that out again. But I really think it's the membership and not the attendance. But let me read the quote. It says, the ELCA seems not to be reaching many in non-traditional households. 90.9% of all ELCA households are headed by a husband-wife couple.
Households, not members.
Well, that's true. Okay.
It's a little bit different, but it's still.
But headed by a husband-wife couple is still, it implies something. So I find that a little disconcerting if there's any accuracy to that. And maybe there's no accuracy to that. Maybe that's really not.
I'm not aware that the Brooke Report asks for that statistic.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
I'm not familiar
with
that.
They may have just gotten that from a sample.
It could be from Lutheran's Report. I don't know.
Because I know in the congregation from where I come, we have a large percentage of widows and, well, of single people for one reason or another. And the home with a husband and wife both in the home is way down the scale. We just don't have that much.
Yeah, I also was surprised by this. I even checked with our research person in our division for Congregational Life, and he said he thought that was pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'll go back and check again. We had assumed, in terms of the possible percentages, that it was about a third of our percentages, a third of the members in congregations were single adults. That's what we have been operating on before this particular statistic came out. In fact, we put out in our division a bulletin insert a couple of years ago that was a singles ministry bulletin, and it says, "We're members of your congregation, one third of us are single adults." So we were making that kind of an assumption 2 years ago when this came out, and this was sort of a way to sensitize people in congregations to the presence of single adults in the congregation and that sort of thing. So when the other statistic came out, I thought, gee, I think maybe we made a mistake. However, it's hard to tell what the real picture is. Some congregations, particularly in areas in large cities, have many, many, many single adults. And in rural areas, there may not be as many young singles, but there may be a lot of older adult single folk, widowed or divorced. So, you know, there's a wide age range, and we think that about 40% of single adults are over 65, about 40%. That's based on some population statistics, and that's probably pretty accurate. We know that there's about 11 million more single men. No, more single women than single men. Excuse me, that was a hope maybe. But no, there's 11 million more single women in this country than single men. So there's also implications there.
Well, ladies, we have our work cut out for us.
It only takes one.
Okay. Well, it doesn't seem like the story evoked many responses from many different people, but I think perhaps
I'll respond. You want to know how to respond?
Yeah.
As people were shy, but I've been shopping in several churches in the Seattle area, and I won't mention all the denominations. I'm formerly recovering from Lutheranism, and as a divorced single woman from Catholicism. I mean, you know, that's like, you know, I go to recovery with codependency on Catholicism. So, I mean, I was laughing during that because it's almost a stereotype of what a single person can almost expect going into a Christian community, church of any denomination. There's just sort of a strange aura you carry. I don't know what color it is, but it's hard being green.
Okay. So you've experienced similar things.
Oh, sure.
Walking into a church
for
the first time.
I really like to find an eyeball. Eyeballs. You know,
yeah.
People looking at you even.
Yeah.
There's just some sort of sheltering. And it's almost in any denomination. I mean, it doesn't have any particular name brand to it.
Mm-hmm. Are there any different experiences with single adults than what was shared either in the story or those that have shared here in this group? Do any of you have any different experiences walking for the first time into a new congregation?
I think it makes a difference how long you've been single and what your attitude is towards singleness.
Mm-hmm.
I've been single for 14 years.
So have I. Right.
So
but
I know.
We, as members of these congregations, have to hold our hand high and be a member of that group. I mean, we've been there all these years. We belong there as well as they do. They, the married ones. And you just become active and do the group things and do the single things.
Okay.
I'm probably lucky. I'm a member of Howard Lake United Methodist Church, and there are quite a few singles and quite a few widows there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of singles groups, one for the younger singles and one for the older singles group, singles. But usually I don't go to them. And
mm-hmm.
and probably because I'm comfortable. My husband died 6.5 years ago, and he was a member of the church too, so lots of people knew me. I sang in the choir, sing in the choir,
mm-hmm.
and all of that. So I knew a lot of married people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they continued to accept me, even though I was widowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still part of their group, even though I was single.
Mm-hmm.
Invited to the parties, invited to come to everything, you know. But most of the people were married.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just a few single people. And we'd often sit together, but we talked with all the marrieds too, because I knew them when I was married, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of a different sort of relationship. And I didn't feel uncomfortable in a moment.
Yeah, so you were fortunate in that
support.
You already had a support system.
Right.
Built in, and this wasn't a new congregation that
right.
you were walking into and trying to find
mm-hmm.
a place in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
I've just moved from a congregation that I was a member of with my cousin and family for 40 years. And just this past fall, I moved to a new community and to a brand new church
mm-hmm.
in a larger town. And my experience was that in my former church, My church and my relationships there in organizations and choirs and everything were really important to me. And so I was determined that when I moved, that I was going to find a way for these things to be a part of my life again.
Mm-hmm.
So even before I joined the church, the first thing I did was walk into a choir and ask if they, you know, wanted singers. Which of course they always do, that's a good place to start. And it was a nice little nucleus that had something in common, a group that accepted me then for that one thing. And what I found is that through that one thing, that as I've joined the church and they've recognized my face, and that it really hasn't been as hard as I thought it was going to be. I've really made some nice friends there, and people, both married and single, have been very welcoming.
Okay, so you've had some real positive experiences too.
But what I found was that I couldn't sit back and wait for them to come to me, that
okay.
I had to take the first step.
Exactly. Well, I had just the opposite experience. When I left that Lutheran church where I'd been the assistant organist and everybody was just kind of, you know, off in their own little married world, and I went to a Presbyterian church in the U District in Seattle, and it was like the first time I was there, it was
Amen.
Like, I was bowled over at how warm the people were to me.
Okay, so you felt welcomed from the very beginning without much effort on your part. You,
and
it
I
was
didn't even do anything.
The congregation's
I mean, I
effort.
I just went into this church, walked into this church and worshipped with them. And afterwards it was just like, people came up and talked to me of their own accord. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it was really nothing like I've ever experienced before anywhere.
Okay. So it sounds like there's a lot of different kinds of experiences, a lot of different messages that various congregations have given people, singles in particular. Margaret?
I also had a very positive experience. I live in Geneva, Switzerland, and the first time that I went into the congregation, everyone was also very welcoming. But I think that's because we're all foreigners. Yeah. And nobody belongs in the community for any set period of time. And so we make an effort when people come. We make people stand up at the end of the service, introduce themselves, say where they're from, why they're there, how long they'll be there. Mm-hmm. And then people reach out. And it's a wonderful sharing community.
Okay, so there were some intentional things done in that particular place to make people feel welcome. Okay, Howard.
I have the impression that there are two kinds of churches on this, maybe three or four, but there are some churches that will make you feel welcome because they simply are geared for that. Mm-hmm. I think you find it more in the evangelical and the conservative and the fundamentalist than you do in the mainline. And you find it more in some sections of the country than others. But I think if the church has a singles program, then it takes it in its stride. And University Presbyterian is one of those that's both generally friendly and warm, as well as having a singles program. And I've had the other experience in two or three churches in the Seattle area, having come from Texas in the largest, in one of the largest singles organizations in the world, I guess. First Methodist Fort Worth has, I think they're up to 8,000 members now. There were 6,000 when I left there. But they have 1,200 members of one singles organization called Downtown Singles.
And there's a Downtown Singles group in Chicago that's Methodist Church oriented. It's probably the same connection.
And
it's phenomenal.
And they have 1,200 members in the Downtown Singles, which is 40 and above singles. And they have one Sunday school class that averages better than 400 every Sunday morning. But there's another side of it, and in their program, and that is, unlike the Northwest, they believe in hugging. And every time you come there, you can't get in the door without having a half a dozen hugs. I mean, before you get in, you never find a seat before you have at least several hugs. And of course, they got a few just official greeters, you know. But then they'll even take, it's a long program, hour and a half, 2 hours, Sunday school. And so they'll have a 5 or 10 minute break in the middle of it. You just get up and you hug the people around you. And then
if you don't like hugging, you don't go to that church.
That's right. That's precisely correct. And some people were turned off by it. But then they have neighborhood groups, and I was in a neighborhood group, but where we averaged around 40 every Thursday night, and usually in homes. And but we found out from our experience that if you hug people when they come and hug people when they leave, they're more apt to come back. And I don't know that hugging is a prerequisite, but I think that if you don't have hugging, then you need a substitute. You need some kind of genuine greeting that is a routine, is a ritual, is something that you can take for granted, is going to happen if you get there.
Okay, so you've had one kind of really warm experience, and you think it's pretty important.
I just noticed that I live in the Seattle area too, and I've noticed when I go to churches that are predominantly African American or Hispanic American, there's a much warmer welcome and more gregarious, outgoing kind of reaching out to welcome people.
Okay.
Take them in.
So that there are different styles. And some styles seem to be more welcoming and more warm than others. Do you imagine? I mean, there are both singles and coupled folks in this room. Is that, am I correct in assuming that there are both? Yeah, I think as I look around, there's both singles and coupled folks here. Would the experience be different walking into a new congregation as a couple or as a single person. Is that...
Well, I have many experiences going to many different churches, and sometimes I've gone alone and sometimes I've gone with my husband, so it's a real mixed bag of experiences. But there are congregations where if you are not a frequent attender there and walk in, it's very uncomfortable. You just have this feeling that there probably are pews reserved for certain people, and you kind of tiptoe around hoping you're not going to sit in the wrong place, and people are really cold and unfriendly. And it's just real awkward. Okay.
So perhaps it's more based on the nature of the congregation itself and how welcoming that congregation is in general than the singleness piece of it. Yeah. Is that maybe a good assumption to make?
The other example I was going to give is the congregation that I'm a member of, which is 99% single parents. I mean, I think there were two married couples in the whole congregation. But they don't. I mean, it's really a difficult situation for many reasons. But the interesting thing is that the people in that congregation are struggling with so many issues, including single parenting, that it's very difficult for them to have the energy to do a whole lot of greeting with other folks. They'll greet someone who comes in who is already a friend of theirs that they already know. But I'm not sure it's a tremendously friendly congregation either. Just because there are so many people there that are very preoccupied with lots of personal issues.
Okay. So that just because a congregation may be predominantly made up of single folk, that's no guarantee that they're going to be sensitive to other singles coming in, or have the energy to do intentional things to make the congregation feel more welcome. Okay.
I think that's true, but I also think that Rob made a good point earlier in saying that churches in general don't tend to take young singles seriously. Because I had that same experience, and I've been out of school for a year and a half, out of college. And I was back in Alaska. I was living with my parents, but I was still supporting myself with, you know, paying my bills and whatnot. And in that church, I was not known as Lori Steele. I was known as Mr. and Mrs. Steele's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think you had a good point there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that as a young single, it may be even more difficult.
Yeah.
Let's try to brainstorm just a bit about what are some of the messages that churches give or have given as we've been attending, belonging to churches over the years. What messages have churches given about singleness?
Well, this is more a question because I'm pretty young and I guess almost expected I'll be single right now. But I'm kind of wondering, I've talked to people that are older than me, I know a woman she just turned 30 and she's kind of making a decision about whether she's going to remain single. I mean, it just is a decision to make. But that she expressed a lot of pressure and assumptions from people that you needed to be matched up with someone, and staying single wasn't a good, if you have married friends that they're always trying to set you up with people. Right?
Staying single,
it's kind of a negative thing.
Is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a question.
I think that is a message that is often given out in churches in many different ways.
Okay. In what ways might that be given out? Staying single is
unacceptable. Well, in the PR, they say this is a family-oriented church.
Right.
Okay. Family-oriented. And what do they mean by that?
They don't think...
Well, the nuclear family. Husband, wife, 2.5 children.
2.5.
In some churches, they're like probably 70% of the adults were single mothers, but they were a family-oriented church, and that well, they care a lot for the children in the church, but everyone's brother and sister. So it's a different kind of message about saying that, brother, this is where your family is.
Okay, so that.
So that's kind of a different. If it's family oriented, it's family. The church is a family. It could be a message too. That's opposite of that, I guess.
Okay, so that in some congregations, the message may be that this can be your family, especially if you're a single parent family. So sometimes that might come across in the family oriented church message.
The way that certain denominations or certain congregations, I guess it depends on the pastor.
Okay.
I'm not at all sure how predominant this may be anymore, but there's a whole lot of unspoken messages. Like the couple or the family gets up to do the readings of the day, or these couples are assigned to be the readers for this day, or these couples and children are doing the candle lighting. And all of the visible symbols of activity in the congregation are all being done by couples or families.
In Minnesota, there's not that many single, well, I guess in the Catholic Church it's opposite, but as far as single leaders of the church, that's not a very.
Yeah, it's always the president of the congregation and his wife.
I think you're right, you know, and like I guess just something popped to my mind is like, when a child is baptized, you very, very rarely see a single person chosen as the godparent. It's usually a couple.
Okay, so back again to the symbols, the rituals, the symbols and rituals, I guess, may be couple or family oriented. Okay, and the leadership, as someone said, is often married leadership. I wouldn't say always, but often.
But especially the clergy, because I had a friend who recently was graduated from seminary, and the bishop to the synod to which he was assigned, and he was not married, said in very indirect ways, we are hopeful that you will get married very shortly. You will not be a single pastor.
Okay, and that message could be subtle or very overt.
I had a minister, good friend of mine here about 12 years ago, he told me, he says, well, he says, Tom, he says, you're so-and-so age, he says, you really should get married before you're 50. He says, going past 50, he says, you should get married right around, you know, he says, you shouldn't go over 50. He says, getting old and living alone, he says, it's really not too good for But I mean, I listened to him, and you know, I mean, that's true. I mean, it's not really nice, you know, to really grow old and be by yourself. And he made a good point. I mean, he was in ministry for 43 years, and he listened, and he saw a lot of people that were over 50, and they weren't comfortable with themselves, only with a mate sometimes, in a lot of cases. So his point, it always stuck with me, and I just thought I'd bring it up and share it with all of you.
Tom, okay, so
I have a good answer for that. I have a relative of mine who's, I think right now he's 78. He was married for the first time 3 years ago. His wife, this is her third marriage, but it's working out wonderful. It was a great marriage. You know, they were married with the pastor from her church, the pastor from our church, and it was just a wonder. They're happily, so there's hope.
Well, I'm not past 50 yet, so I mean.
You can tell them.
Did they have to get married?
Kind of back here.
Yeah, well, I'm with the same quantity of singles group that I hear Tom at all the time. You know, we're getting tired along, you know. But we have the assistant pastor, you know, or pastor for the singles, you know.
She's older than he is.
And the message he gives the people, well, we advertise in the paper, singles meeting, and speakers and all that, and we'll get a group of people come. Maybe each meeting there might be 20 new people, and we got a mailing list of about, how many?
900.
How many?
900.
Oh, of which there's usually about the same 50 people or 40 people, and then 20 extra new ones. And the message he gives it, every once in a while you hear him come up there and start talking, well, how nice it is to have you come in here and so forth, the new people, but this is not a meat market. And then he goes on, and that message, well, then we don't see a lot of those people again, you know. And I don't know what I'm trying to say, but he lets people know right away.
I think you bring up a real important point. Back in the 60s, even somewhat into the 70s, I think, a whole ethos grew up around having singles groups for the purpose of finding partners or mates, or I mean that was sort of seen as the purpose, and maybe even back in the 50s, I don't know, even the youth
those were
groups
those sort
and young
of success
adults.
Stories of the,
yeah.
of the singles groups,
yeah,
that so and so and so and so got together through this singles group,
yeah, and wasn't this a wonderful place to find
as if that was the
partners.
Only purpose for
yeah groups. Yeah right. That seemed to be the purpose of singles groups back then. And in fact, I've gotten some letters since my portfolio includes singles ministry in the Division for Congregational Life. Any letters that go to the bishop or any place else that have to do with singles end up on my desk eventually. And I've gotten quite a few letters from particularly older adult women, and some from men too, who have said that they really believe that the church, you know, the broad term church, that the ELCA is missing the boat because we no longer have all those organizations that or groups that encourage finding Christian partners. There was several letters that were just irate that we weren't encouraging that kind of group. But I think what's real important is that we begin to give different messages about singleness so that we don't consider that marriage is the only acceptable lifestyle, and that besides that, our mission is not to find a partner and become married. Jesus called us to follow him, not to get married first.
But you don't hear the church saying that, though. You'll have sermons on family, on marriage and all that stuff, but you don't have the message that will ever affirm you for being single.
And that's the point that we're trying to get here with
and
the messages.
And it is okay to be single. Mm-hmm. Somebody may feel perfectly comfortable being single, want to be single the rest of their life,
yeah.
never want to get married for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But the church never really says that's okay.
Yeah. What seems to be missing in the messages that we get from the church is that it really is okay to be single, and it really is mature to make decisions about singleness. Rob, you were talking about young single adults particularly are not necessarily taken seriously. And I've talked to even middle-aged single adults who have said that in their congregations they've never been seen as actually growing up, because in their congregations getting married and having that wedding is sort of the
rite of passage
yeah.
to adulthood, and therefore if they don't do that, they grow into their 40s, and no one ever recognizes through any sort of rite of passage that they're really an adult. Now, that may not be the experience of those of you here in this room, but it has been the experience of many who have shared that with me.
I would say that's been true because I was married and then divorced. It was amazing. I was an adult when I was married, and now I'm a child again.
So you feel that even having been married,
right,
and then returning
right
to a single
now
status,
as a child again, and I get angry about it.
Okay.
Because no, they won't accept me as an adult. But
okay.
I was when I had that wedding ring on.
Okay, so the wedding ring seemed to make the difference for you. That's been your experience. Okay, and you know, I think, again, we have to recognize that there are many different experiences in this room. Some have not been that, but I've heard many similar to yours.
We have a banner in singles. One is a whole number, and I think every church should have that hung in their sanctuary, that being single is okay.
That is the name of the
book. Howard, is that?
I have the impression that most of our churches can't, with integrity, say it's okay to be single, because the majority of the people, of the members, and the majority of the ministers, really don't believe it's okay.
Okay, that's where I want to get this discussion moving. Is it okay, or is it not okay, in the eyes of the church, to be single?
Well, certainly most congregations don't want single ministers.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the experience of most of you in this room?
Not a single minister, I would say so.
Okay, so as a single pastor, you
not
would
okay.
say that's your experience. And what about for the rest of you?
We had a single minister. Our church hired a senior's minister after he'd gotten a divorce. Our senior pastor for about 2 years was single. And we have four pastors, and our singles pastor was hired as a single person.
Okay. So that you have a different experience
mm-hmm.
over here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For 5 years we had a single pastor. They were all great. And then when he left, then of course we got an interim. He stayed on, but he's married. And him and his wife are doing our pastoral needs right now. But my brother, he's also a minister, but when he was called to a church up in Michigan, he was single for 7 years. And yeah, that's right, 7 years. And then he got married 7 years later, but they had no problem with that, and we had no problem with it. So I guess it depends on where you are.
Well, I know, too, for women ministers, at least, I don't know, maybe the statistics have changed from when I came as close to going to seminary. But part of the reason I decided to not go was the statistics for calls for women, single women ministers, was extremely low.
And it remains that way in terms of statistics.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. really not my perception in congregations that I know.
Mm-hmm.
In the area where I live, I'd say 95% of the new pastors that have come into that area have all been single women. They've all been in associate positions, too, which is
yes.
very important to notice.
Well, this was 11 years ago.
Yeah, and so, the other thing I'm going to say is that I think there's a huge distinction between a single, never married pastor and a single, divorced pastor in terms of acceptance.
Mm-hmm. What's the distinction?
Oh, I think there are a lot of congregations that are very prejudiced against someone who's been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But then there may also be some that would consider that person may be more able to understand the situations of many people within a particular congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it may depend on the congregation itself. It sounds as though there's a lot of different experiences here.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, in talking to people that I know in the ministry, single men were saying that it was more difficult for them to get calls than single women. Now, what that's all about, I don't really know. But there was this perception that the woman would marry the church and work, you know, 24 hours a day for that congregation so that they'd be really, really getting a bargain with the Lord pastor.
That's an interesting perspective. Rob, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't know how, I mean, I don't really know, but how churches would trust a single male pastor. They might think, yeah, he's going to fool around too much, or somehow the less responsible than a single, or than a married man.
Okay, let's put that other perception up here, that message that we receive from the church, that perhaps single adults are less responsible.
Yeah.
Is that a message that is
especially
sometimes
sexually
given? Okay. I think, you know, these are all messages that may or may not be present in specific congregations.
Sometimes you find, I know in my own experience in Canada, we have a Lutheran minister that's not married, and he was at my sister's congregation, and she said all the time he was there, they had to pack the church with extra chairs. He got the people out. He just told them to come to church. He just had a way with them. He visited everybody in the whole community, small communities, whether Catholic or Lutheran, wherever they were, he was Lutheran. And he came to the city of Calgary, and he started a big church there, and everybody came. In fact, when he moved to another community, half of his congregation moved with him. They wanted to be with him. He was so well-liked. We had that personality, just knew people. He didn't care about getting married. He took care of his mother when she passed away. He's just one of those kind of persons that's just extra. And other pastors who have been married told me he can give more than a married man because that's all he is. He's just married to the church.
Let's take a look at that piece too, that message that sometimes churches give to its leadership if they happen to be single is that, how shall I put it?
Don't have a life outside the church.
Okay. That if you're single, then therefore you should be giving all of your extra energy that you would have put into a relationship to the church. So that may be an added burden on a single leader, whether it be clergy or lay.
I don't think that's even just leaders. I think that happens too.
You think just
regular
members?
Exactly. Well, perceived as really having any life.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you're available all the time.
Right.
Remember when we did those initial
Available. Yeah.
Stereotypes that
right.
I said available, because I do that with my single friends. I call them up and just think they don't have anything else on their calendar, so I'm waiting around for me to call them up. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Plus, the congregation will think they can pay them less because they don't have a family to take care of.
That's
yeah.
True. Okay. So they can pay them less.
Yeah, and the married women troop the cookies over there and put up about 40 pounds on them. I see it, man. Do you?
You've never seen me bring cookies, Tom.
Yeah, I see them older ladies bringing them in to make me cry.
Okay.
I'm afraid to talk too much as usual, but I've been a pastor since close to 50 years ago. And in most of that time, I was single. And by my statement that most congregations don't want single men, people, while it's true that in several of those congregations, we were delighted with each other. The majority of them wanted me to stay even when I moved. And they were quite happy with me. But on the other hand, in finding an appointment, a congregation doesn't know who this is, but they have a choice between a single person not knowing that much about them, except that one's single and one's coupled. Almost invariably, they would choose the married ones. And behind it, there's the assumption on the part of many people, well, if he's young and single, he's going to spend all his time chasing after a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's old and single, there's something wrong with that man.
Mm-hmm.
And now where women are concerned, I can see why many congregations might be more comfortable if she's single, because if she's married, what are you going to do with that man? I mean, his job's going to conflict, all kinds of things. You know, I mean, it's a problem.
So that it's not, from your description, it sounds like it's really hard to win.
I've said too much.
Go ahead.
I'm afraid to be too personal because I'm not sure I want to make these kind of confessions, but I'll go ahead. And that is that.
What's said here stays here.
Nobody will listen to it. What I was going to say was, I was 40 years old when I got married, and both because of the delay, and the delay was caused in part by my father's interference, and then my marriage to this particular girl was caused by my father's interference. And I knew immediately that it was the worst blunder in my life, almost immediately. But I delayed divorce because I reasoned, I've been a minister 15 years, more or less, and I reasoned, well, the church really didn't have any room for a single minister, and it sure doesn't have any room for a divorced single minister. So I delayed getting divorced until we conceived the first child, and then I wouldn't leave, you know. So anyway, I shouldn't have said all that. But anyway, the problem, and since then, times have changed a little bit, and I've served 3 pastorates since I've been divorced and retired. And they've all accepted me without any problems. But at the same time, if it's a church large enough to have some choice, they're going to choose the married and not the divorced.
Okay, so you found some of these messages to be really true, that staying single is unacceptable, divorce is unacceptable, and it's been difficult to find positions based on that. Since we don't have too much time left, let's move into what kind of messages could the church be giving around singleness that would be more acceptable, be more life-giving,
somewhat
more affirming. Okay, but specifically, you know, we don't have much room up here to write, but I want to write some messages that the church could be giving.
Affirmation of us as human beings and our talents.
Okay, affirmation of talents regardless of marital status.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably happening in some congregations. Some of you have expressed that. But by and large, the message is staying single is unacceptable. It's almost like an interim period, that it's okay to be single now. We'll accept you and affirm you with your gifts, but would you like to meet this person and come over for dinner next weekend?
When you say something about matchmaking, sometimes you find matchmakers. You're
going
to try to hook
up
with someone.
Okay, so the affirmation of talents and gifts without pressure to become coupled, is that, would that be an okay way to put that up as a message the church could give? Okay. What else? What other messages could the church give?
I was single for 3 years between my first and my second marriage, and something that really sticks out in my mind is how my friends looked at me differently after my divorce, and they would maybe call and say, why don't you come to supper tomorrow night because my husband won't be home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like I was, It was really weird. I was really offended. I wasn't going to go hit on their husband. I still enjoy visiting with the man, having conversations with the male. But it was like, I don't know if they were trying to be sensitive to me, to say, my husband's going to be traveling and will be gone, so why don't you and your children come to supper?
What was the message that you heard in that invitation?
That I wasn't all right as a single person to be in a home with a family. So I think one of the messages we need to give to single people is that it's still okay to be part of family-orientated, and that's whether you have a child or not, that it's okay to be included in family activities, be invited to someone's home for Sunday dinner, whatever.
Okay.
Be you single or be you a couple.
Okay. And not for the purpose of... it's okay to be included in family activities, and no one has to feel like they have to invite somebody else along.
Yeah, or else
to be a matchmaking.
For whatever reason.
Right. What other kind of message might be in that, though, for a person that's in a couple, looking at it in a more positive sort of light? What other message might be there if a woman waits until she is relatively free to spend time? Is there possibly a positive message in that too, that if I invite you when my husband is here, I can be a friend to you, I can give my full attention to you? I mean, there may also be a positive message there, but you received it as a sort of a negative message, and that's the important, is your perception of it. Yeah. What other messages can the church give that would be life affirming for singleness? Anything else that you can think of? What would you like the church to be saying? I'm assuming that these things over on this side, the messages that we have received from the church, are messages that we would like to be a little different. Is that an okay assumption to make? That staying single is unacceptable, we really don't want the church to keep giving us that message. That just a family-oriented church without being inclusive of singles is not really a good message to give. The one about divorce is unacceptable. What about that? Is that a good message to give for those of us who may be single or divorced? I see some heads shaking. No. The symbols and rituals are couple or family oriented. Is that an okay thing for the... Okay. Well, I think we would want that to be different, that could be more inclusive. What about our leadership? How many of you as single adults are involved in an important leadership position in your congregation? Okay. Quite a few of you in this room. That's good. The whole idea of churches giving the message that it's less responsible to be single, I don't think that's a really good message to be giving. What about the one about being available all the time for church activities? Okay. So we would want to change that to something like making choices about how much time to give to church, just like we would assume would be the case for a family. What was this one? Oh. That single pastors get paid less sometimes because there's no family. Is that...
I was just going to say that a message that I'd like the church to give is that it's actually richer for its diversity. So it's not just okay if you're not this and not that, but that makes all of our lives richer.
Yeah. Okay. Richer for diversity. Okay.
I like what Tom said about number one is a whole number.
Yeah. Okay, one is a whole number. Okay. I want to pass out these voices of congregational life pieces. You can have those. There may be enough for everybody that's here. I don't know. There's an article in there that talks about diversity in a particular congregation that has done some things around their singles ministry that seems as though it affirms some of these messages that we think we'd like the church to begin. It's on page, I don't know what page it is. You'll find it. It's something about diversity.
Page 11.
Page 11, is that the one it is? Okay, great. Okay, but you can have those, and it's just an example of a congregation. And we'll be meeting again, for those of you who want another singles emphasis, tomorrow evening at 6:45 in here for singleness and sexuality. Okay? So I'll see some of you then.
Thank you.